If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Hi, and welcome back to The Carol Markowitz Show on iHeartRadio. We have to be aware of bad ideas, and that's why I'm sharing with you that I cringed through an article in the New York Times reviewing a new book about polyamory called More, so that you don't have to. A rich lady who lives in Park Slope, Brooklyn, which is where we lived before we moved to Florida, so I can tell you Park Slope is where the worst of ideas are born. She goes out one night and flirts with a man in a bar. When she tells her husband about it, he suggests she sleep with the man and tell him about it. They proceed to open their marriage and have what sounds like the most horrific experiences ever. And they suggest you do the same. The husband admits he was not at all discerning about who he slept with when they first opened their marriage, but it doesn't really sound like the wife was either. At first, she mostly slept with men who were cheating on their wives. Great. And then she describes people like Carl, the German who pushes her to have a threesome with him and his fiance and then never calls her again. Or the French guy who refuses to wear condoms and likes to have sex in public bathrooms. And she ends up getting kicked out of a co-working space because you're really not supposed to have sex in there. And she talks about a younger guy who is well endowed but can't actually perform in bed. So hot. And then there's the part about her kids finding out that the parents have opened their marriage that just made me want to die. The truth is that, in general, I'm very freewheeling about what you want to do with your own life. Are there people who will be happy with polyamory? I don't really believe it because it discounts human nature completely, but if that's what you're into and it works for you, go on, have fun. What bothers me is that marriage, actual marriage, where two people love and support each other and are actually happy together, really never get the New York Times treatment. It's all unhappy marriages and unhappy people stepping out on their spouses and trying to convince the rest of us that this is the best way. I get that stories about happy people with functioning relationships and non-cringy sex isn't a story, but we have to wonder why that is. And something I think about is that most people still believe that 50% of marriages end in divorce, and it's completely not true. That was at its peak in the 80s, and I would say that part of that was cultural and portraying divorce as like this fun, amazing thing you should try. But that number is actually about a third of marriages today, and that's genuinely a sharp decline. Part of the reason I started this show was because of all this negativity around marriage in our culture. And the constant push of these kinds of stories that portray marriage as a burden and family life as something you need to shrug off in order to be happy. I like having guests on who are in happy marriages or hoping to get into one. I like showing that the better path is to find a real partner, to have a balanced marriage, and to get to be your actual self and not be scouring cheating websites to find rando men to fulfill something in you that just won't ever be satisfied. On this show, I hope to be the antidote to stories like the ones the New York Times shows you. and I thank you for listening. Coming up next, an interview with Annika Rothstein. Join us after the break.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Hi, and welcome back to the Carol Markowitz Show on iHeartRadio. My guest today is Annika Herrnroth Rothstein. Annika is an election advisor and author, CEO of the ad agency Nomad Ghana, and just an all-around badass. Hi, Annika. So nice to have you.
So nice. What an introduction. I love it.
I added that last bit.
No, I'm like, I kind of feel like I need to update my business card or something.
I agree. I definitely, I can't believe that's not already on your business card, honestly.
No, I mean, it's
so you're, it's, yeah. You're our first international guest on the show. And I mean, it's been all people in America thus far. And you're a Swedish woman in Ghana. How did that happen?
By accident, is in my life, I would say. Mm-hmm. The condensed version is that I had just gotten back from Venezuela. I was supposed to take a break because I had an intense time in Venezuela. I get a message.
I remember the Venezuela years.
That was a lot. So I was like, I'm going to chill out, like maybe write my second book or do something. And then I get a DM on Twitter from somebody who says, want to work on elections in Africa. I feel like you would be a really great fit. Saw what you did in Venezuela. If you can survive that, you can do anything. And because I have no impulse control whatsoever,
thing to say,
I thought to myself, that sounds wild. Let's do that. And that is now 4 years ago.
Wow.
And some change. Yeah.
So do you see yourself staying there?
I don't know. I've learned not to think too hard on these things because it just tends to not work out that way. I gave myself 5 years when I came, and it ended up like being a good situation for me. Initially, I said 5 years because 5 years is after 5 years, you live somewhere. Maybe that's just my internal logic, but after 5 years, you're properly settled. And I haven't reached the level of maturity in life yet where I'm comfortable being properly settled.
I think 5 years makes sense. Yeah.
Because it just felt right. So I'm thinking that I'm going in 6 months. I'll take like a mini break somewhere and think about it and figure some stuff out. But that's the level of planning that I'm at. Always. And so far, so good, kind of.
So Annika's book is Exile. It's very, you could see it's very well worn. I read it a lot. It's Portraits of the Jewish Diaspora. And it, what it is it traces Jewish communities all around the world in different places that you wouldn't imagine there are Jewish communities. So what would you say was your kind of most unique place that you visited, and what did you like about it?
Well, I mean, Iran is the thing that stands out, I suppose, because it's a Jewish community that a lot of people think about, have opinions about, use as a tool for in various debates, whether it's for or against something. The Persian Jews are, and the Jews of Iran are used a lot. You know, that's something I found after the fact. But being there, it impacted me. It made me a much more ardent Zionist, I think. I mean, I was pretty hardcore to begin with, but it made me understand. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I was sort of to the right of Genghis Khan before that, and then it just moved.
Right.
But most of us have never had an experience, been able to figure out what life is like before Israel or without Israel. Mm-hmm. Thank God. We don't know that. But being in Iran made me understand what my life would be like as a Jew were it not for the state of Israel. That was the, right. I could walk in their shoes for a moment. And I mean, of course, I could leave. It's different. But it made me understand the enormous freedom that comes with even me in the diaspora. For me to be a Jew, feel free to speak, act, be Jewish, speak out, act out, because I know that I have a light for act, you know, somebody watching my back. Yeah, there's always backup, right? And I was able to spend 2 months with people who have no backup. It humbled me to what they have to do, what they can't do, what they have to do, what they can't say, what they have to say, all of those things, which is why I'm a stark defender of them, and also very sensitive to when people speak about them, I would say. But it was, and then of course I was able to go to the tomb of Esther and Mordechai, which was, you know, a tremendously emotional experience. Mm-hmm. to be in an ancient Jewish community, and just, it felt, I mean, everywhere you go where there's Jews, that's home, you know, to some extent. But it's more with the political aspects of it, the atrocities that they go through every day. But having a Shabbat meal in Tehran is something that will stay with me forever.
Yeah.
Like it's the most amazing experience.
So you spent a lot of time in Venezuela, and I think you really quite have an affinity for the Venezuelan people. Is that fair to say? I feel like I've heard some real warmth from you about them. What was that like? What was how long did you spend in Venezuela? Because I
felt
like you were there.
I was there. Yeah, I was there.
And not like a long time ago either. Like it was, I mean, I'm saying it wasn't like pre-revolution. It was like
right. It
recent,
was like you know? 4.5 years ago, I guess, now that I left, or even less. And I mean, it's affinity, it's passion, it's love for them. And I found it felt like home. I guess maybe that also speaks to my love of chaos, of chaos and noise.
You? No.
So maybe that's between me and my therapist, what went on there. but it just, it was one of those places. And the same thing with Iran. I was supposed to be there for like a week, and it turned into 2 months, which was ill-advised in a lot of ways. The same thing happened in Venezuela, because I was supposed to go there, cover. I came there right after Juan Guaido had announced. So it's like, I'm going to go there. I'm going to write about it. Maybe go to shul and we're done. And I stayed a year because I just could not stop digging at it, because it's one of those places where you think you get it, and then something happens, and then you understand, oh, so it's all shit. Like I thought that, you know, I came there, I think I was still, I still wanted to believe that there's like a good and a bad, and, you know, that there could be just this unequivocally good side and somebody is fighting in the freedom and justice thing of it all, of course, we all love that. The curve of that drama is, it speaks to it, all of us.
Do you want to tell us about that, or is that a touchy?
Well, it's not touchy. I mean, I was deported. So I was deported.
As you are, right? Uh-huh. I love the first deported, by the way. The first time I was deported.
Yes.
Because obviously that was not the only time Annika was deported.
No. It was the signs of two kidnappings, one deportation, one illegal entry, and one warrant for my arrest by the Sabine, which is, that's why I ultimately left after a year, because I was deported. And of course, you can't enter again, technically, but it's quite easy to smuggle oneself in into Venezuela from Colombia. Usually people go out, as we know.
Usually,
but I actually, I had the help of a rabbi. I won't mention his name, but a rabbi helped me sneak into Venezuela across the bridge. So I came back. I got kidnapped again for the second time after having done that. And then they found out I was there illegally and used that as an excuse to issue a warrant for my arrest. The intelligence services, the Sabine. And then that, even I realized that you don't want to get disappeared in Venezuela by people who are trained by Cubans.
Yeah.
So I
remember thinking, I need Annika to get out of there, like right now. And that's enough.
Yeah, that was, there was,
again, I knew there were you, obviously. I love that there's this amazing, you know, Jewish Swedish woman who goes to these crazy places and tells us the stories. But like a lot of people, I'm sure, in your life, you worry me. You definitely worry me.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time when, during that time, my best friend was a very calm and collected woman, wrote me and said, I would like you to send me your funeral plans, as I assume that I'm the one dead in the phone call. And at that point, I realized,
she sounds Russian, honestly.
Yes, she was very light. She said, I would like to know. I'm assuming you want to be flown to Israel. So please let me know how I should go about that. But that was the point at which, when you had to negotiate your exit with a foreign intelligence service, which was what I was doing, I hid in a brothel for a few days and negotiated my way out. The only leverage I had was my Twitter following and basically putting them on blast. And basically their anti-Semitism, because they believed that I was much more connected than I actually am. So that was because I had been accused of being, as always, a Zionist entity, spy, etc.
Right.
You know, the usual stuff.
Interloper, yeah.
You know, that's just what they usually, the classics, the hits. So I used that to my advantage and basically played that side up dramatically and said, you know, if you do not allow me, like, safe passage, the Mossad will come down on you. Which I very doubt that anybody would come to.
I totally know them.
I totally know.
No, I can tweet at Mossad right now, actually.
Exactly. So
let me go.
So that was it. That was the end of that year. And a lot of people were very relieved on both sides.
I'm sure. We're going to take a quick break and be right back on the Carol Markowitz Show.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
So I don't know if I've told you this before, but I've been to Venezuela a few times when I was young.
Oh.
It's actually our first trip. Well, so, you know, I'm born in Russia. I moved to America. My parents, super poor. But their whole life goal is, as soon as they make any money, is to travel. And our very first international trip, or I think it might have been our very first trip anywhere, is to Venezuela. And we get there and we get to the Caracas Hilton, and it is, oh my God, magical. A pool. I don't think I'd ever swam in a pool until that point. And then we take like a rickety plane to Canaima National Park, which is, you know, red water and piranhas and just the most beautiful thing ever. But for me, I was like, can we go back to that pool at the Hilton, because that was way better than this hut that we're sleeping in at night.
Obviously, yeah.
So I have warm memories of Venezuela, and it was a Russian hotspot. And when I say Russian, I mean ex-Soviet Jews who live in New York,
right.
not Russians in Russia. But Venezuela was a big tourist destination for a long time until it wasn't.
Right.
So I hope that they get back to, you know, being a country where you can be safe and I can take my kids on a rickety plane to Canaima again someday.
Because it is.
That would be the goal.
It's the goal. And it's also, even now when I live in Ghana, my favorite place in Ghana is a region that looks exactly like Venezuela. So it's
really,
it's
what's the region?
The Volta region. So it has the same, you know, the mountain and river and rainforest, and it's both slow and fast paced at the same time in a very strange way. There's like an intensity to it. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's some irony in the places that I love the most are places that maybe I could get into those countries again, but I'm not sure how I would be allowed to leave. So the list of those countries are growing.
Which is really the most important part, you know?
I found that it is. I've learned through the years that leaving is really essential, or leaving on your own terms.
Right.
Is essential.
Yeah. So a question that I ask all of my guests is, what do you think is our largest cultural or societal problem in America? But obviously you're not American. So what would you say is worldwide the largest cultural or societal problem, and is it solvable?
Oh, wow. Okay. Worldwide. That's a lot of responsibility. I mean, I think
you can pick a country if you want.
Well, I'm happy to.
Sweden, you know, Sweden's biggest cultural problem is,
I'd get canceled if I said.
Yes.
But I mean, as a person, you know this, I've written extensively about it, that as a kid, I spent my summers in Dallas, in Texas. Mm-hmm. And it kind of started my whole love affair with the U.S. And it was so drastically different, because Sweden in like the 90s, early 90s, was a closed country. I mean, a lot of socialism, a lot of like one channel on the TV, one kind of ketchup, that kind of thing. And
right.
You're right. And I got to Texas as like an 8-year-old.
What a country.
And I was like, whatever this is, like, put it straight into my veins. Like, I was the most
amazing. Like, I'm converting to American right now.
It was the most amazing thing I've ever experienced. And not just because of
this, and also just to have Texas. Yeah, to have Texas be your first extra, American experience, like the most American, you know, extra.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And I kept going back and going back, and I stayed with my dad's best friend from high school. My dad went to high school in Dallas. This guy was, it wouldn't happen today, single man in his 50s, hardcore Republican. We basically watched the news, went to the Alamo. Went to the school, the book depository. Like, he was like taking me through. We watched the OJ trial together. Like, there was a lot of like different.
Wow, memories.
but the thing that I fell in love with was how unapologetic it all was, right? Like, there was clear identity. I understood what it was. Like, some of it was loud and strange and a lot. But I understood what it was because people understood who they were, which to me as a Swedish person,
that's so big.
Yeah. And as a European, that's like, wow, people are saying like, this is who I am. I'm standing by it. I had a shirt that said, don't mess with Texas. I'm like, okay, I get
that.
Right. Like, I get this. And to juxtapose that with Europe, it's a dramatic thing. And what I see today is I went through most of my life assuming that everything else can change. Europe changes a lot through my adulthood, growing into an adult that has changed drastically. But I knew that the U.S. would always stay the same, I thought. And what I see now in the U.S. is very reminiscent of what I've seen in Europe over the past, let's say, 10, 15 years, which is lack of identity.
So interesting.
And it's the thing that has, because we've all the movements you see in the U.S. now, all this extremism, this side taking, the vitriol, the bizarre identity politics, we live with that. Like, I've lived this story already. Like, I've seen the movie already. Never in my wildest dreams would I think that this would take place in the U.S. But I think it's, although the European lack of identity comes from a different wound, in my opinion, which is the Second World War, and sort of the lessons, the wrong lessons that were taken from that, they kind of cast off nationalism and national identity and all of these things.
Right.
I'm working very hard not to make this like a TED Talk, so I'm kind of skipping it. But what I...
But I'm like, in my head, I'm like, after this, I'm going to message Annika and say, you have to write about this. Like, you must write something about this. This is such a good point that I really... don't think I've seen made elsewhere.
Well, what I saw...
go on, please. Yeah.
What I saw is, and I'm going to take one thing that to me, when I watched it as a person who has strong links to the Middle East and to Europe as a Jew, all of these things, although I hate saying as a Jew, so let's just...
As a Jew, right. Yeah.
When I saw Obama's Cairo speech, I was like, wait. This is different. This is like a crack in the veneer. This is a way of speaking about America and the world that I don't, and I'm not American, but I, somebody who is like wholeheartedly adopted America and has a love affair with that country. This is not the identity that I know it to be. It is apologetic. It is moving away from like, oh, we're not all that. We don't want to be too involved. We don't want to be this. We don't want to be that. It was distinct. He was distancing himself and by extension the U.S. from all the things that we desperately need the U.S. to be, because it's applicable to draw like a very, a very perhaps strange conclusion from it. Me as a like as a European Jew, I learned very early on, if I become less of myself, they're going to punch me twice as hard. Nothing good will ever come of me saying, sorry. I don't like Israel. Yeah. I'm not that Jewish. I'm Jewish. Don't worry about it.
Right.
Your food.
They don't even kill you less at that point anymore. You know,
like there are no, like my mom always said, there are no first class tickets on the train to Auschwitz. And I understand it's a very harsh statement, but it's also
it's real.
It is. And so what I loved about the U.S. was like, okay, sometimes it's like that guy that we sometimes think is an asshole. I'm not sure I'm allowed to say that, but otherwise
you're totally allowed to. Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
But we respect him because he is we know what he's about. And we also know that, like, if I'm backed into a corner, this is the guy I'm calling. So,
yeah,
we understand that entity. And now none of that exists anymore. So it's like the same thing that I see in Europe, that for 15 years we've been in a tailspin. Nobody, when pressed in Sweden specifically, if somebody asks, what is it to be Swedish? They go, oh, I don't know. I'm saying I'm Swedish is a compliment. If you say to somebody you're so unswedish, that's a compliment in Sweden, because we have such disdain for ourselves. And that is,
but
yeah, I know you probably wanted to.
Do you see the pendulum swinging? No, I love this answer. I think this is like amazing, and you definitely should write about this. And I'm going to read it and share it. But do you think the pendulum will swing? Because I have to say, there was right before Brexit, which, you know, everybody was like, no way Brexit's going to pass. Like the polls were all like, absolutely no. Mm-hmm. A British lefty friend of mine posted something like, what's the big deal about being British? Like, why do we need to be on our own? Like, why can't we just like stay in the European Union? Nothing makes us that special. And I swear when he posted that, I was like, oh, wow, this thing is going to pass. Like, nobody wants to think they're not special. Nobody wants to think there's nothing unique about their culture. Like, I was like, this is passing. That was my moment. And when it did, I was like, yeah, I mean, this is it. British people want to feel British, and Swedish people, I think somewhere in there, want to feel Swedish. I think that's just like what's become acceptable to say. And every time a right-wing party wins in Europe, it's like, oh, how could this happen? Well, I can tell you how this happens.
Right.
You
know? Well, the problem is that in lieu of national identity, everybody is the main character. Every single thing is the main character. The goal should always be to have a strong national identity so that we unite under a certain...
Yeah.
Now we're living in a house without walls. You know, this everything kind of goes right, and with national identity comes sense of purpose, unity, religion, most likely all of these things that are values that
all of
trickle
it.
Down. And when you take that away, you know, a vacuum will long to fill itself with something, and it's all these little pieces that come in. And where everybody is the main character, everybody needs to replace us because we need that identity. And it's been taken from us in Europe, or we gave it up, rather. And is the pendulum swinging? Well, I think that what I see in Europe is that, we have fractions, right? Like, there are fractions where there's very strong identity in this corner over here and that corner over there, but that's not what we're looking for. I have had a strong sense of paradise lost for, I don't know, I guess it's 20 years now. Oh, God forbid. Mm-hmm. Because I grew up in a place that was very, very different. It wasn't the most exciting place, but I knew what it was. And that, I don't think in my lifetime I will ever see again.
We haven't talked about it, but you have these two beautiful teenage sons.
Yes.
And you live this exciting, amazing life. You're, you know, CEO of a company, and you're just awesome. Do you feel like you've made it?
I don't think it's in the Jewish nature to ever feel you've made it. I feel like I hover around 75% on a good day. Like, that's a really good day. On a bad day, I'm like a 34 perhaps. So, and I don't expect that to ever change. Like, I recognize that there are some aspects of my, like, I have moments when I think, wow, like, this is crazy. This is amazing. But it's like, you know, like Jewish parents, when you come home and you have like straight A's and then one B in gym, or in my case, an F in gym, then the focus is the gym. Like, nobody.
I am that Jewish parent.
There we go. Like, we're flat.
The joke in my house is like, an A, why not, like, you know, or it's like 100, why not 105, you know?
It works. You know, it's like.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, every birthday I've ever had, like, that used to be the running joke that his only question, like, no happy birthday, was always, is this the year you're getting your PhD? And because it's like embarrassing to be the person without a PhD. So,
humiliating.
I mean, come on. It's the shanza. So I think that it's kind of in one's nature to not feel like, because I don't expect in my life to ever feel like, oh, I made it. I'm cool now. I'm good. But if I can maintain a 75% where I like feel that that's the average, I'd be very pleased with that.
So end here with your best tip for my listeners on how they can improve their lives.
Well, so the tip is as follows. I thought about this and I was like, oh, I have to be like really profound. And then I thought, no,
I have to be real.
I know, it's a lot of pressure. But then I remembered, so it's actually, I'm the youngest of three girls. And my oldest sister gave me the best advice I ever got. And it changed my entire life. And I was about 21, 22. And I was in my very like navel-gazing phase that lasted about 10 years.
Who among us?
Right?
Yeah.
But it was also like, I was in the kvetch phase where it was a lot like, dad did this and mom did this and well me and like I was really like heavy into therapy and heavy into myself and heavy into what everybody else owed me, and I guess she got sick of it. Like, they had coddled me for a long time because again I'm the baby, so I expected that. And then she kind of,
yeah,
she had enough and she said, I'd like you to make a list of the five best qualities in yourself. The five things about yourself that you're the most proud of. And I made this, I really thought about it because, again, I love thinking and talking about myself. So I was happy to get this assignment because that was like pretty much my object in that. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm independent, I'm intelligent, I'm a survivor, like all of these things. And she said, okay. And now I'd like you to tell me how many of these are because you had a happy childhood. Mm-hmm. And it shut me down.
Yeah. I'm going to use that. Happy childhood. It really does,
right?
You know, lead to a lot of other good things.
So she looked at me and she was like, yes. So things were kind of shit. Okay, dig where you stand. Mm-hmm. Say thank you very much. I'm an adult now and I'm going to go deal with the world, deal with my shit and take my own responsibility. And I like it. It really, it was the slap in the face that I needed, but I've applied it. I've applied it because I'm an adult, which means that whatever goes wrong now, it's on me. Whatever goes right is on me. And that sense of responsibility.
That's the worst part of adulthood.
I hate it. I mean, it sucks. But what I found is it helped me to get out of the place that so many of us get stuck in for a long time. And getting back to what we spoke about before and what we see going on in the US and in Europe and everywhere right now. I think a lot of people would do well to kind of apply that in one's life and to realize that, yeah, it's easy. If we look even for a second, we can find people to blame for all kinds of things. But once you get out of that business, it leads to really positive places. And so that's the best advice I ever got in life.
It's really great. Thank you so much for coming on, Annika. Her name is Annika Hernroth Rothstein. She's fantastic. Check out her book, Exile. She's Truth and Fiction on Twitter. Really good follow. Thank you so much for coming on.
Such a pleasure.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Carol Markowitz Show. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.